Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, here we go on a Thursday pack. This is The Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, we are live in Los Angeles on iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, and FS1. Urban Meyer in 45 minutes. Greg Cosell next hour. Chris Haynes on his interview with Kevin Durant stopping by today. We're absolutely packed. Joy is on assignment. Veteran newsman John Goulet will be updating us on an NFL trade that's taking place today with the Browns and the Texans. It is so great to have you in. Let me start with this. I am really enjoying, I never knew that Jerry Jones and Stephen Jones were pro wrestlers, but they are tag team partners. One day it's Jerry banging on Zeke. The next day it's Stephen Jones banging on Zeke. Then it's Jerry banging on Zeke. And then Stephen Jones banging on Zeke. These guys are tag team partners. WWE, which, by the way, is coming to Fox very soon. Let me go to the first thing. Jerry came out. Remember that? And Jerry said, you can win Super Bowls without star running backs. And then Stephen came out and said, a couple days later, you know, any money we give Zeke is just taken away from other Cowboy stars. And then Jerry came out yesterday and said Alfred Morris, the running back they signed, has the best feel of any running back I've ever seen. And then Stephen came out later in the day with Rich Eisen and said he won't call us back. Here's Stephen Jones.
How often are you talking with Zeke's team these
Very
days?
Very rarely. There's this perception out there about negotiations that, you know, there's these ongoing talks and they go on hours at a time. And, you know, that's just not the case. You kind of set the boundaries of where you think it should be. And certainly, you know, they're all represented by very sharp people and they're trying to do the best for their client. And you kind of sit there and you stew on it and you think about it. You know, you're always trying to think of something that might bridge a gap.
Okay. So remember, this is the latest thing. It's a tag team partner. Jerry, you can win Super Bowls without great running backs. Steven, you're just taking money out of Dak and Amari's hands. Jerry yesterday, Alfred Morris has the best feel of any running back I've ever seen. And then Stephen Jones comes out later and says, nobody's returning our calls. We're not close. Okay, so this is tag teaming Zeke. Are they getting nervous? Are they getting anxious? Now, I've felt from the very beginning, Jerry and Stephen have been very shrewd with their public comments. But there is a reason they are going out in public. They are trying to put pressure on Zeke. And I think Zeke has two things going for him here. And they're not the things that people think. Well, he's a great player. They need him. No, he's got two things going for him. Number one, Jerry Jones is 76 years old. He doesn't want to waste another season. When you get older in life, you just don't have time to waste. When you're on the back nine of your mortality, you're not going to waste time. You want to get things done. I can tell you, the older I get, the less time I'm willing to waste because I have less time on the earth. That's an advantage for Zeke. An older owner hasn't won a Super Bowl in a while, finally has a roster, he doesn't want to waste a season. And the second thing that I think helps Zeke is in the division, Philadelphia is great, well-coached, Carson Wentz, and they have all their young stars signed. But even out of the division, the NFC is loaded. I'll give you nine teams not in Dallas's division that I think are capable of making the playoffs. The Falcons, the Saints, and the Panthers. The Packers, the Bears, and the Vikings. The Rams, the Niners, and the Seahawks. That's just out of the Dallas Cowboys NFC East division. So I think those are big advantages. The NFC's loaded. The division, Philadelphia, may be a Super Bowl favorite. Jerry is 76 years old. There is a reason that Jerry and Steven, on a daily basis, are coming out and doing a tag team on Zeke. They're feeling it. This is not a time to not have all the ammo for the NFC East, the NFC, with an aging owner. So I think it's a blast to watch. I think it's really fun. By the way, Zeke has shut it down. Zeke's in Mexico. Zeke's not talking. Zeke's not calling. Does Zeke understand he has leverage here? Because this morning, when I see Stephen Jones talking and Jerry talking about how great Alfred Morris is, Cowboy leadership getting a little tight, getting a little closer to games, and getting a little anxious. Kind of feels like it this morning. Kind of feels like it. All right, let me shift to this. Aaron Rodgers time. You know I think Aaron Rodgers is great. But when the comparisons were made years ago to Tom Brady, I said, well, he's got a better arm, but I think there are certain leadership skills that Tom has that Aaron does not have. I think Aaron's talented. He's more mobile. Maybe he's a better athlete. He's got a better arm. I'm not disputing that. Of course, Aaron is thin-skinned and thinks I don't like him. I think Aaron's great. He's one of the 10 best, 15 best quarterbacks in the history of the game I've ever seen, and I've seen all of them that matter. I'm not joking. Outside of Otto Graham, Johnny Unitas, I think I've seen most of the great quarterbacks. But it's interesting. Finally, another member of the media, sports media, NFL media, is recognizing what I'm recognizing. So Pro Football Talk came out yesterday and admitted Aaron Rodgers' criticism of joint practices, which he did yesterday, amounts to criticism of his new coach, Matt LaFleur. Pro Football Talk also acknowledged in the last 2 weeks, 3 weeks, Aaron Rodgers has criticized his new coach twice. One, on the audible thing, he didn't love the restrictive nature of Matt LaFleur's audibles. And two, by coming out and saying, and this is what Aaron said in the last 48 hours, in regards to the Packers' joint practices with other teams, quote, I don't think live special team drills are smart. The kickoff especially is dangerous. I just don't think it's the best use of joint practice. So what are you saying? This is essentially the equivalent to an eye roll to your coach. This is the equivalent of calling your coach stupid. If Tom Brady came out and said, you know, I think these joint practices, I think these special teams drills are not very smart. Would he say that about Bill? Would he question Bill's audible system? This is the eye roll. Two eye rolls before the season starts. By the way, isn't Jeff Saturday, former Packer, the one that came out and said Aaron would roll his eyes at Mike McCarthy's play calls? Didn't Aaron Rodgers lead the NFL last year in throwaways by a mile, basically acknowledging before the play started, I hate it, I'm throwing the ball out of bounds. This is the gap that I've discussed for years, Brady and Aaron. Aaron is condescending. Aaron goes public with it. Aaron takes shots at superiors. I don't control practice. It's not very smart. That's the gap. That is the gap. It's not talent. Aaron's got arguably more of it. But, I mean, ask yourself, if you were a high school coach, you're a high school football coach, and your high school quarterback came out and said, yeah, I don't think these joint practices are very smart, the high school coach would go down and talk to his high school quarterback. If Tua came out in college, if they had college joint practices, and Tua, the quarterback at Alabama, said, yeah, I don't think these joint practices are very smart, Nick Saban would bring him into his office. The difference here is Matt LaFleur, the new Packer coach, has to eat it because Aaron Rodgers is a, you know, he's an icon and he's rich and he's got a Super Bowl ring and he replaced Favre and he's idolized and he's worshipped and he, you know, mostly he's one of the great talents of our time playing quarterback. But make no mistake, these comments, thank you Pro Football Talk, these comments were essentially the equivalent, the audible comment publicly and the special teams comment publicly, they're an eye roll. Which is all I've been saying for years. Aaron's talented, but he's condescending. They did a study years ago at the University of Washington, years ago, about why couples get divorced. It's not cheating. It's not money. They could predict with 99% accuracy why couples would get divorced. They would interview couples. They'd sit them down for a couple of hours. They'd ask the couples together all sorts of questions. And they could predict with 99% accuracy if they would get divorced. And do you know what the factor was that the social scientists or the psychologists could spot? Eye rolling, condescending, not respecting your partner. That just led to a Packer divorce. And already in a relationship, we're not even to the preseason games yet. These are calm waters. Already, Aaron is doing what teammates have claimed he did with Mike McCarthy. Sometimes you got to eat it. You don't want to go public. You could tell your coach in private. But Aaron makes a point of going out, making it public, which essentially is kind of embarrassing your head coach. I don't want this system. This is stupid. Why are we doing this? Those are private conversations. So again, Aaron just got a divorce from a football coach. Throwaways led the league. Eye rolling in the huddle. This is what causes divorces in real life. And it's just nice occasionally that I don't have to carry the water for the criticism of Aaron Rodgers in America, that he's not perfect. I mean, we're always willing to say Tom Brady's not very athletic. Tom doesn't get mad. He makes fun of that. On Twitter, he makes fun of that. Does everybody have to say Aaron Rodgers is perfect, or can we acknowledge now more eye-rolling? Because that's all these quotes are. They're the equivalent of eye-rolling, which has been my primary criticism of Aaron for a decade.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
So there was a deal made this morning. The Houston Texans traded a fourth-round pick. It's a conditional fourth-rounder. It could become a third-rounder. To Cleveland, the Browns now have 9 picks going into next year's draft as of now. And Cleveland gave Houston a really nice, I think, number 2 running back in the NFL, Duke Johnson. It's a very, very high-end number 2 running back. Not sure he's a 1. Cleveland didn't need 3 running backs. One of my criticisms of Cleveland is they got too many mouths to feed. When Kareem Hunt comes back, they're going to have Kareem Hunt, Nick Chubb. They don't need a third running back. They've already got more than enough tight end talent, wide receiver talent, running back talent. Get some better offensive line talent. So I like to move by Cleveland. Move off a running back, get a pick for next year, accumulate draft picks. You can use them, or you can use them for a trade to get a more veteran player later. Also, Houston is a very good football team. People forget this. Houston won the AFC South last year, not the Colts. Houston reeled off 9 straight wins. Houston got off to the bad start and was really good at the end of the year. This solves a real issue for Houston, okay, because this team's got great defensive line talent, great young quarterback, superstar wide receiver. Now they have 2 very capable running backs. They have very athletic linebackers. Now Houston, go out and solve your other issue, left tackle. Trent Williams has been a very, very good Washington Redskin for a long time. He's the best player they have on their team, and he is adamant he will not play for them. And Trent Williams is a man. He is Washington's best player, and he's adamant, I'm not playing. Houston needs a left tackle, okay, because they have the other components. They have the other – now they have 2 legit running backs, star receiver, athletic linebackers, star young quarterback, who I really like, Deshaun Watson, very good athletic linebackers. They need a dominant, imposing force on the offensive line. They've cobbled it together. It was putrid last year. Reports are it's better, but it would have to be. So I think for Houston, this is a win-now move. This is a we're close, and I agree with him. I think Houston is close. Now, Houston doesn't have a history of winning those big games, especially away from Houston. But this is kind of a win-now move. Deshaun Watson still on that young rookie contract. This is what we see, a trend going around the league. Get young guys, quarterbacks on that roster. Bring in players now and win. Cleveland's doing it with Baker Mayfield. Jets are doing it with Sam Darnold. Rams have done it with Jared Goff. Cowboys have tried to do it last couple of years. Not as much as I would like with Dak Prescott.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
I'm a believer that when you raise young people, you got to be careful about missing steps. I've said this about the NBA before. This insistence that you find a high school basketball or an AAU player, 1 year of college, get him to the NBA, you're skipping steps. The maturity process of college. You're going to tell me a 19-year-old wouldn't be better with 1 more year of Roy Williams or Mike Krzyzewski or Jim Boeheim or Bill Self or Mark Few or Jay Wright? Of course he would be. We're skipping steps. That's why Adam Silver says, the commissioner of the NBA, all my players are unhappy. That's why there's so many busts in the NBA. You're skipping too many steps, a maturity step. College is where we all grow up. It's where you grew up. It's where I grew up. I learned how to make my own dinner, make my own budget, make my own class schedule, had to figure out how to use time efficiently. College was a valuable resource. Even though not a lot of the classes did anything for my career, it was a maturity stage, a maturation stage. You can't skip steps in life. Like when you see these child actors in Hollywood that all turn out to be losers, they skip steps. They need to go to summer camp. They need to be a kid. I don't want a 7-year-old to be on a movie set. That's why so many of the child actors are train wrecks as human beings by 25 years old. They're skipping steps. Let a kid be a kid. Let him go to hang out and be on an inner tube on a lake and go to a birthday party and eat too much candy and chocolate and get in a fight with his brother and his sister and, you know, a normal process for a kid to be a kid. Their brains don't even form until they're like 24 years old. That's it. It takes a boy's brain 24. So skipping steps is generally, you can succeed initially, but over time, you will pay a price for it. So there's an article in Yahoo Sports, and it made me laugh yesterday. I'm not going to pick on the writer, but Freddie Kitchens is now managing the Browns with lessons he learned from Nick Saban and Bill Parcells. Okay, time out. He spent 1 year as a grad assistant with Saban at LSU and 1 year as a tight ends coach with the Cowboys with Bill Parcells. He's not exactly a disciple. He spent 11 years with the Arizona Cardinals. That's his resume. That's his coaching experience. But what worries me about Freddie Kitchens is, and I'm not saying he can't succeed, but this article insinuates that he got great tutelage from Saban and he got great tutelage from Parcells. In fact, his general manager, John Dorsey, says, one of the things I admire about Freddie Kitchens, he's got no ego. Well, Parcells does. Nick Saban does. He has nothing like those guys. But what I worry about Cleveland is that Freddie Kitchens missed steps. Okay. Cincinnati hired Zach Taylor, and people said, that's ridiculous. That's a terrible hire. Who is Zach Taylor? Zach Taylor had been a college offensive coordinator and an interim NFL coordinator, then studied under the smartest young coach in the game, Sean McVay. Then he got an NFL job. He didn't skip any steps. People think Sean McVay of the Rams, he was like the new hire. He came from nowhere. No, he was an assistant position coach in the NFL for a year. He was a position coach in the NFL for 3 years. And then he was an offensive coordinator in the NFL for 3 years. Then he got the head coaching job. And he's like the guy that's considered a meteor, a rocket to a head coaching job. Not to mention, he had relatives who were in the NFL, so he hung out in the San Francisco 49ers offices when he was a teenager. Big advantage. Freddie Kitchens did not. Kyle Shanahan is considered, and I think Kyle's as good a young coach, including Sean McVay, as the league has. Kyle Shanahan was a coordinator at 4 different teams. Okay, Jim Harbaugh, he was played in the NFL, most valuable position quarterback. Then he was a position coach in the NFL. Then he got a small college head job, and then a bigger college head job. And then he went to the NFL. They didn't skip steps. Nick Saban was a defensive coordinator in college. Then he was a defensive coordinator. And then he got a college job. Then he got a small college job at Toledo. Then Michigan State. Then LSU. Then NFL. Then Alabama. There's no step skipping. Freddie Kitchens had never been a coordinator. Last year, he was a running back coach for Cleveland, who is now the head coach. I'm not saying it's impossible. I do think their roster is really good. I think Baker Mayfield is going to run most of that offense, but Baker's a kid, and Baker needs tutelage, and Baker needs guidance. That's just a reality for Baker. So does Sam Darnold. So does Josh Allen. So does Josh Rosen. So does Lamar Jackson. So does Mitch Trubisky. But I see this all the time. When I used to work at my former employer, I was in local TV and radio for almost a decade and a half before I got to my former employer. So by the time I got there, I had a game plan. I had a person. I mean, I had, you know, I knew exactly day to day what my brand was, what my belief system was. I always tell young broadcasters, don't be in a hurry to get to the network at 25 years old. Go make a bunch of mistakes. You're skipping a bunch of steps. Go to Midland, then go to, you know, Ann Arbor, and then go maybe do weekends in Detroit, and then maybe a weekday job in Chicago, and then you can go syndicated. Stop rushing to get the big job. You're skipping a lot of steps. So when I see this article on Freddie Kitchens to manage combustible Browns with lessons learned from Nick and Bill Parcells, first of all, combined, he worked for him for 2 years, one as a grad assistant. His reality is Arizona, where he had a bunch of positions and never a coordinator, And John Dorsey, because he doesn't want pushback from his coach. That's John Dorsey's personality. That's why he and Andy Reid did not get along, because Andy Reid pushed back on John Dorsey. So Andy Reid got him out of the facility. John Dorsey hired a kid who, to me, is skip steps. And I think if you look at camp so far with Freddie Kitchens, I don't think he's done a bad job, and I'm rooting for him. I'd like to see this thing be – I'd like to see the Browns not be man overboard. I think they'll be good 9-7, but don't kid yourself. This is a hard team to manage. OBJ, Baker, youngest roster, high expectations. And the very quiet Pittsburgh Steelers down the street are just sitting there looking and rolling their eyes at the circus on a weekly basis Cleveland is delivering to us, the media.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
Remember when Kevin Durant got hurt and then he came back in the finals? What was the first reaction by the NBA media? It's the Warriors' fault. They pressured him. It's the doctors. It's the training staff. NBA media, in my opinion, coddles its players because stars run the league and none of the reporters want to get ghosted by the top players. So they suck up to them. So when Kevin Durant got hurt, even though he's a grown man, the immediate NBA media reaction is the Warriors made him play and the doctors made him play and bad training staff. And Kevin Durant yesterday dispelled all of that nonsense and came out and said, hell no. The Warriors pressured me into getting back. Nobody ever said a word to me about rehab. When the series started, I targeted game 5. Hell nah. Just happened. It's basketball, man. Blank happens. Nobody was responsible for it. So the entire narrative, and that was the first reaction by the media that covers the NBA, which is coddle baby, protect the stars. This is why Adam Silver says our players are not happy. This is why therapists tell you don't overcompliment your kid, because when they face crisis in life, they won't be able to handle it. Stop coddling the players. They're grown men. They love basketball. They want to play basketball. NBA media, because they're beholden to a handful of really popular stars, their initial reaction to anything is coddle. Kevin Durant wanted to play. Wasn't anybody's fault. He wanted to play basketball because he's a basketball player. And I, by the way, the NBA media, I bring them on all the time. I like them. But, I mean, that was just basically a nonsense take. Kevin said none of it. By the way, the other thing is, you know, this kind of leads into, I didn't think Kevin Durant took enough heat for leaving Golden State. He left for a weaker roster, less money, worse head coach, unknowns in the front office. Why would you do that? I mean, if Tom Brady left Bill Belichick and Robert Kraft 5 years ago, 6 years ago in his prime because he wanted to be the man in Jacksonville, we'd make fun of him. If Derek Jeter in his prime left the loaded Yankees to go to the Kansas City Royals to be the man, we'd make fun of him. We'd go, what an idiot. Kevin Durant left more money, current dynasty, great GM, better roster, amazing teammates for a bunch of unknowns for the second most popular team in New York. And basically it was like, well, he wants to be the man. It's not a good move from a business decision. It's not. We would crush Derek Jeter leaving the star-studded Yankees. We'd mock Brady for leaving Bill Belichick. But again, everybody's petrified of offending the NBA star. They're grown men. They make their own decisions. They can handle criticism. Kevin Durant, nobody forced Kevin Durant to play. Kevin Durant's a man. He's like, by the way, he has his own doctors and trainers with the Warriors. They're like, go play. Sometimes injuries happen. It's nobody's fault. They just happen. Guys get hurt all the time.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
One of my favorite guys, 30-plus years at NFL Films, Greg Cosell is joining us on the phone today. Okay, so Greg, today we're going to look at two divisions in the NFL, the NFC okay. East and the AFC East. So let's start with the NFC East, which is Philadelphia, Dallas, New York, and Washington. So let's start. You've looked at a lot of tape on the NFC East. People have said Zeke is crucial for Dak, but yet Dak was 7-2 when Amari became part of the offense. When you look at the Cowboys, are we understating the value of Amari Cooper to Dak Prescott?
Well, I think a really good receiver always helps. But I think, Colin, you have to talk about their philosophy and their approach. There are quarterbacks who will play well in any given system, but this is a system that starts with the running back. That's their philosophy of playing the last 3 years, basically since Dak got there. Now, he's been efficient at times within that system. There's other times he's not been efficient. Certainly, you add a quality quarterback, quality receiver. But what struck me as fascinating in watching a lot of tape over the summer of the Cowboys, particularly since Amari got there, is they didn't necessarily feature him. In other words, they would often line him up as the X receiver, the single receiver to the boundary, the short side of the field. That is sort of the main receiver in offenses. They didn't automatically throw him the ball. I don't know whether it was a coaching thing. I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. But I'd be very anxious to see how it plays out this year now that he's there through an off season.
Right.
But this team is not built, or hasn't been for the last 3 years, on the quarterback. The quarterback is a complementary piece.
Yeah, we're watching some video of Amari Cooper. I do think some of that was he was injected into the offense mid-season. Now they've had an entire offseason. I would think that Amari Cooper would be more – they would focus more on him. I would think so.
He's very talented.
Yeah. All right, let's go to the Philadelphia Eagles. I think they're my Super Bowl favorite. I do have questions about Carson Wentz and his health and durability. Are the injuries avoidable, or are they just happenstance with Carson Wentz?
Well, I think, though, that the ACL is just one of those things that happened. I know his back, apparently he's had back problems before, so we don't know about that. I did talk to a GM earlier this week who came right out and told me that the two best young quarterbacks in the NFL, hands down, are Mahomes and Wentz. So, you know, I think if Wentz stays healthy, he's a really good player with a chance to be absolutely special. They've got a lot of weapons. I think you'll see them be incredibly multiple with their use of personnel and their formations, and they'll present a lot of different looks and put a lot of pressure on defenses.
Washington with Dwayne Haskins. I like some of the things he does. But when I watched him this year, when you make him move off his spot, his accuracy dips. I think he needs to be coached up in the NFL. How close is he to ready to play a starting quarterback role in this league, in this tough division?
Well, as you know, Colin, we always say that quarterbacks are not ready and then they play. So, you know, that's a tough question to answer. I remember when Trubisky played his rookie year and everybody said there's no chance. And then he started, 12 games, whatever it was. So Haskins will play. Whether it's week one, we don't know the answer to that. The big issue with Haskins is when there are bodies around him, his feet get a little heavy.
Yeah.
He loses his mechanics and fundamentals, and he tends, as you said, and you're 100% right, to lose his ball placement. So in the NFL, you tend to have to throw with bodies around you far more than you do in college, where at Ohio State, he basically ran a quick game offense. So they'll try to do a lot of that with him, but there will be situations where he's going to have to take deeper drops and there'll be pressure. He's a pretty good thrower of the football. So, you know, if they can protect him, and that's the critical part here.
Yeah, I had an NFL general manager tell me about, it was at dinner about a month ago, he makes enough NFL throws in college that you know he's a franchise quarterback, but you just don't know much beyond that.
Correct.
He does have the arm. He does have the size. Let's go to the New York Giants. Now, my takeaway is, before their cluster injuries at wide receiver, that they have done over the last 2 years, Dave Gettleman's taken heat, but I do believe they've elevated their offensive line over the last 2 years. I feel that. Now, I don't think their defense is as good. Some players like Olivia Vernon just left to Cleveland. They'll miss him. Giants offense. In this division with high-powered Philadelphia, in the NFC with high-powered offenses, do the Giants, are they a pop gun? Do they have the ability to get in shootouts and win?
I don't know if they have the ability to get in shootouts. I think that Dave Gettleman's approach, and maybe their defense is not quite good enough now, is that you build through the offensive line, the defensive line. It's an old-school approach. Now, if you're going to have the foundation of your offense be the run game, then your defense theoretically gets to play fewer snaps. It's the Cowboys approach. You build through the run game, you control the pace and tempo of the game, your defense plays fewer snaps, maybe you can camouflage and compensate for some of the weaknesses in your defense. The question is, can they do that throughout the course of 16 games? You know, it's really interesting when you look at Eli Manning, and these are just cumulative stats, but when you look at a lot of his stats situationally, he did not have a bad year last year. There's the sense that he's terrible, but cumulatively the stats indicate that he was pretty good in most situations. Now he needs to be, I think, controlled a little bit, and that's the whole point of Barkley.
All right, let's go now to the AFC East. We won't start with the Patriots. We'll finish with them. Let's start with Sam Darnold and the Jets. You were at Jets camp. They've got some new faces. Le'Veon Bell, C.J. Mosley are very high-end players. What is your get? Now, you told me last week that their offensive line, and you told me this before they added Ryan Khalil, that it was a little better than people like me think. So I would imagine if the O-line is better than we think and they've added Ryan Khalil, you're fairly hopeful with this offense.
Well, they also added Alex Lewis, who was a starter with the Ravens and then came out of Nebraska a few years ago. So they have really good O-line depth right now. Their big issue is skill position players. They're lacking in that area. They're trying to make Robbie Anderson a much more complete receiver. He's a big-time vertical dimension.
Yeah.
But so that's their main issue. They know that's their issue. Now, I think you can work around that to some degree, and Adam Gase is a very good offensive coach, but obviously there are times when you can't work around that. So that's a little bit of an issue for them. And then defensively, where they're lacking and don't have depth is at corner, another important position in the league. They're well aware of these two major issues. The question is, how can they work around them? Their front seven is very, very good on defense.
Yes, it's very, very good. And I think they're trying to make up with their deficiencies in the secondary with a great pass rush. And, I mean, it feels like to me they'll be very good up front. Greg Williams is very aggressive as a defensive coordinator. So they'll try to add pressure, which limits their susceptibility in the back end. Let's go to Buffalo. Don't talk about him a lot. Josh Allen was mostly what I thought. Big arm, talented, great size, but inconsistent. What do you make of him and the Bills?
Yeah, well, what they did last year, which they tried to play to his strength, which was a lot of intermediate and deeper route concepts, particularly in normal down and distance situations where they'd protect and let him, you know, drive the football down the field. He ran the ball extremely well last year. He actually ran it. Some could argue he ran it better than Lamar Jackson. Now, again, then you get into that debate about, you know, whether you can live like that in the NFL. We'll leave that alone for now. But I think that Josh Allen improved incrementally last year. I think he'll probably continue to do so. They've added weapons. It's actually a team that has pretty good weapons now.
Yeah.
So if they can protect them, I think you'll see continued incremental improvement and they'll be better on offense.
Nobody ever says this. I thought they were a really well-coached bad team. I thought they were well coached. I just
couldn't agree more.
Okay.
And it's funny, I've talked to offensive coaches who say that Sean McDermott, whenever they play him, he gives you something a little different and he's very tough to play against.
Let's go to Miami. Some suspect they're tanking. I don't think NFL I don't think you can do that in pro football. But is it a total rebuild or do they have players?
I don't think they have a lot of really good players. I think again, that's always hard to say. The big question is who will play quarterback. I think when all said and done, it's going to have to be Josh Rosen. Whether he starts week one, who knows? But they have to play Josh Rosen. Ryan Fitzpatrick has had an amazing career coming out of Harvard, but Josh Rosen was a high pick and a very talented player, a very good throw over the football, very smooth. He needs to play. He needs to be out there.
By the way, their offensive line isn't great. Rosen's not overly mobile. Is that an issue?
To some degree. Some think Tunsil's on his way to being the best left tackle in the league. But beside that, they have a lot of moving parts on the offensive line that need to be worked out. That is an issue. Rosen is a rhythmic player. He needs to feel comfortable.
Let's move to New England. That was tough for me to have to get and wait on New England because I love talking about him. Bill Belichick told a friend of mine who's close to the organization, this is going to be one of my more athletic teams. Not only do I think their first five draft picks will play, but their three of their top four draft picks last year who had good camps got hurt. So they may have like seven or eight new faces. Akeel Harry, the wide receiver from Arizona State, obviously is going to play. I think they're going to be a little younger than most Patriot teams. What do you think?
Well, let me ask you this. I mean, they drafted Damian Harris out of Alabama in the third round.
Right. Okay?
When you draft a running back in the third round, my guess is you expect him to play.
Right.
Last year, they drafted Sony Michel in the first round. Now, I know he's coming off an injury, but he'll be ready to go, barring any setbacks. So now they have two pretty big-time backs. Is there going to be a continuation of what they did sort of toward the end of last year, where they kind of evolved into somewhat of a running football team,
yeah,
playing with the fullback devil and playing with what we call 21 personnel, two backs? Is that going to be more of their MO? I'm not saying they're going to move away from Tom Brady and make him just a little piece here, but is this going to be sort of a transition, given the fact that Brady, I don't want to say he lost it, but I thought there were some parts of his game toward the end of last year that I didn't think were quite as good as the great Tom Brady.
Yeah, I think the last 2 years, it looks like to me, they have added to their offensive line.
Yep.
They have added running backs. By the way, even their top receiver pick this year is not a burner.
No.
He's an intermediate route guy. Tom gets rid of the ball. He's a very good, hard. He's a little bit like a poor man's Juju Smith-Schuster, in my opinion.
They're going to have to scheme him open.
Yes. So I do think they're making a transition. Bill sees his personnel. They'll become more run-centric, more power over finesse.
I would agree. And by doing that, they'll give a guy like Harry a chance to be a factor, because you can't line Harry up on the outside and say win one-on-one with isolation and individual routes. He won't do that. He didn't do that in college.
No. All right, Greg Cosell, NFL Films, NFC East, AFC East this week. We'll talk to you in 1 week, my friend.
All right, Colin, appreciate it. Thanks.
Oh, my Lord, was that fun. That meat, I'm stuffed. I just had a huge meat sandwich for lunch. I am stuffed. That was pastrami on rye bread stacked a mile high. That's what you got right there. I hope you could handle it. A lot of you couldn't finish the sandwich. I finished all of it.